Members, please take your seats so we can get started. This is a meeting of the Finance Committee. We're going to start off this morning with Acting Chief Safety Director Chad Krakowski, who will give our safety contact for the day.
Good morning, everyone. Just as a reminder, if you haven't been here before, if the if the fire alarms go off or for emergency, we need to leave. Please exit to the doors toward the front where you came in, the main door through the lobby, or to the exit doors behind me, and we will proceed out across the street in front of the building museum. If necessary, there is a AED, a defibrillator, at the guard shack, if so needed. And with that, today's safety contact, May is National Electrical Safety Month, so the contact is Treat All Circuits is Live. Every year, thousands of workers are injured or killed by circuits they thought were safely turned off. Simply shutting off the power is not enough. You must test all circuits to ensure they are off. All participants, personnel should be qualified, wearing the proper PPE, protective equipment. De-energize all circuits, lock out, tag out all electrical circuits, and test before you work. That is today's safety contact.
Thank you, Chad. We'll begin the formal parts of the meeting with the approval of the agenda. Has everyone had an opportunity to review today's agenda? If so, I'll entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
Motion so moved. For approval.
Second?
Second.
All in favor, please signify by saying yes.
Aye.
Thank you. Second, we'll have an approval of the minutes from our prior meeting of April 14th. I hope you both had a chance to review them. We added some additional language describing the report of the pension subcommittee in those minutes. I'll entertain a motion for approval of those minutes.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you. We will record all in favor with one abstention from Mr. Smedberg. I'd like to give you a brief overview of our agenda today. First, the Chief Safety Officer, Dennis Anaseki, will review a proposal that requests board authorization for the general manager to reduce or waive fares in the event of an emergency and to provide notification to the board of such action, including estimated revenue loss, as soon as practical after the event. This would represent an expansion of GM's current authority, which under current policy, he only has the ability to reduce fares from peak to off-peak levels, not to waive them completely. This was a matter that was brought up last month, but it was referred to the Finance Committee for some review, and it's now moving forward in our regular order. Next, the committee will be asked to authorize a short-term extension of the DC Ride Free on Rail program to cover the 2016 summer school session. That's limited to that 2016 summer school session, which runs from late June to the end of August. Then the committee will receive two informational updates as part of its oversight responsibilities. First, an update on the FY 2016 operating and capital budget results through the end of the third quarter, that is through the end of the 9 months ending March 31st, 2016. And then we will receive an update on the progress on the FTA's financial management oversight testing and validation plan, also an update on progress through March 2016. I am hopeful we can conclude the meeting in approximately 1 hour by about 11:15, but there is a lot that we will be going over in the next hour. I'd like now to turn the floor over to Mr. Anaseki to get us started today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first agenda item today requests authorization for the general manager to modify fares temporarily during emergencies with timely notifications to the board. The current tariff allows the general manager to reduce fares from peak to off-peak. Twice this year, however, the board has been asked to retroactively approve fare changes during emergencies, one in response to the January blizzard and then in response to the fire that we had in March. This resolution recognizes that temporary but immediate actions are sometimes required to serve Metro's customers during emergencies. With that, staff recommends board authorization for the general manager to temporarily adjust fares during emergencies and to notify the board as soon as practicable. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation, and I'll be glad to respond to questions.
Thank you very much. I think the major change from the original proposal presented 2 minutes ago is that we've added this language, which requires the general manager, when he does use this new authority, to provide an estimate of the revenue lost. And I think that is in response to some questions from both board members and jurisdictions who were concerned about the scope of the authorization and wanted to get a handle on what the impact would be on our budget so that the board could act responsibly and either seek a change in the budget, reduction of cost, or some other manner to cover what would ever be the budget shortfall resulting from these emergency measures.
That's correct.
And I believe you've provided some information that on average these emergency shutdowns in terms of daily revenue would be something in the range of, is it 2.8 to 3 million? Is that roughly correct?
About 2.5 million.
So we have a good sense of what the impact would be. Any questions from members of the committee? Mr. Downey?
Procedural question. Normally when we make tariff changes, they're annually and they follow a public hearing. Are we comfortable that that does not have to be done for this change? We have the authority to do this without a tariff
public hearing.
That's a
legal question for council.
Yeah.
Entertain a motion to recommend to the full board that we authorize the general manager to temporarily reduce or waive fares and fees in case of emergency with requirement to provide notification to board as soon as practical with a estimate of what the revenue loss would be for that emergency action.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second? All in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We'll move on to the second item on the agenda, Kids Ride Free on Rail program extension.
Thanks again, Mr. Chairman. This agenda item seeks authorization for the general manager to negotiate and extend the Kids Ride Free on Rail program through the summer, which for the District of Columbia schools runs through late June through early August. As you'll recall, the District of Columbia initiated this program in 2015 as a complement to an existing Kids Ride Free on Bus program. Metro's Board of Directors approved this program starting with the 2015-2016 school year. Overall, this program has expanded student mobility options and shifted some utilization from bus to rail. But we've also faced some challenges related to CAD registration as well as how some of the students have accessed the systems. And so Metro and the District of Columbia are discussing ways to improve program structure and to simplify program administration in the near future. The next slide shows you how the current process works from registration through activation and utilization. And as I mentioned, you know, the focus over the next few months is to try and see if we can simplify the program both for WMATA as well as for the district. For the summer extension, about 11,000 students are expected to participate. But that extension will still rely on the current structure and the current program, as well as current pricing. With that, Mr. Chairman, we seek approval and authorization for the general manager to negotiate and extend this program for the summer.
Thank you. Now, recognizing that you'll be coming back at some future meeting with a presentation dealing with the extension of the program for a future period beginning in September.
That's correct.
I think we can dispense with the sort of those long-term issues and questions for this point. We're just really dealing with an extension for a 5 or 6 week period. Any other questions from members of the committee? If not, I'll entertain a motion to recommend to the full board that we authorize the GM to execute a short-term extension of existing agreements between WMATA and the District of Columbia for the Kids Ride Free on Rail program to cover summer school 2016 period.
Second.
We need a motion first. Thank you. Second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
It is so moved. Thank you. Mr. Adesaka.
Thanks again, Mr. Chairman.
Now we'll go to the informational part on the update on the third quarter FY16 financial update.
The first information item is an update on the third quarter financials. For the capital program, I would like to note that this object will focus on the overall investment levels within the broad asset categories. A detailed discussion of specific capital projects will be provided by the chief engineer through the capital program, planning and real estate committee. Starting with the operating budget, Metro ended the first 9 months of the year with a $32 million net operating margin, as shown in the subsidy line on the table. For the year, revenues are down 6% due to lower ridership, but operating expenses are also lower than budgeted by 5%. Overall, this result reflects Metro's efforts to tightly manage costs in line with lower expected revenues. Ridership, as we've all seen, was particularly challenging in the third quarter. In this particular case, based on two significant events. One is the blizzard that we mentioned a little bit earlier with respect to January, and the other one is the shutdown and fire in March. But overall, ridership is down 5% from same period last year. In terms of revenue categories, Metro access and non-passenger revenues were the only positive revenue drivers through the quarter, somewhat correlating to what we saw on ridership for the period as a whole. On operating expenses, however, there is a broad-based favorability reflecting, again, the efforts at controlling costs across the enterprise. One area that is over budget is materials and supplies. And again, if you recall, this relates back to the use of operating dollars to buy parts to maintain rail cars in order to meet minimum operating levels, given the timeline required to use capital dollars. For the 3 months remaining in the fiscal year, we anticipate revenues and riderships to maintain the same profile that we've seen over the first 9 months. And so, in order to ensure that there's budget balance, the GM has directed that we maintain the current cost control efforts, but we've also identified additional steps that could be taken, if necessary, in order to ensure budget balance. To the extent that those become necessary, we will come back to the board for board information and concurrence.
Mr. Ranasekhi, could we perhaps stop there and take questions dealing with the operating budget?
Sure.
And then move on to the capital budget?
Okay.
But could I ask first that you, if you could just clarify what you meant by the need for mitigation measures, because you did indicate earlier that through the third quarter we're running at a plus of $32 million on the operating budget side. So what factors would you anticipate for the remaining 3 months of the year that might cause you to go negative for the year? And then could you just explain what some of those ideas would be to bring the FY16 year in balance?
Okay. So two of the factors I've already mentioned, obviously we're seeing lower ridership and therefore lower revenues. But in addition to that, if you recall, the board earlier this year authorized the use of operating funds to purchase pads. I mean, and we are continuing to work with McKinsey to identify strategies to enhance that particular process. To the extent that, as well as other factors that we're seeing, increase operating costs, we may need to come back to the board for use of operating dollars or use of capital dollars to help balance our operating budget. Obviously, an additional factor will be the SafeTrack program. As the GM continues to refine that particular initiative, we do not know at this point, you know, if it will have broader impact beyond what we've what has already been analyzed. So there are a series of things that are going on, some of which are not yet settled, that may ultimately impact where we end up for FY16.
So you would come back to us, I guess, is it June 9th is the next meeting after today?
Yeah.
So you'd come back to us June 9th and we could deal with that at the Finance Committee meeting at that point.
That's correct.
And then take action before the end of the month.
That's correct.
Thank you. Other questions? Mr. Downey?
Yeah, on the last issue, the transfer of capital capital funds to operating, as you know, I've been opposed to that continuously. We've done it at one level. We're proposing to go to a higher level next year. It does have to be consistent with what we're trying to achieve with the capital program, and obviously FTA will have to give its approval that these elements that we now pay in the operating budget will have as much safety impact as they would have if we were using them in the capital budget. But I just go on record, this is bad practice.
That is correct, Mr. Downey. And what we are contemplating here, it's not inconsistent with what the board approved. I think we also made it clear when the board authorized the use of operating resources to bypass that this may have an impact on the ultimately on the operating budget, and what we're talking about here will not exceed any of the dollars that have been used to support the capital program.
Question, Mr. Yes, Smedberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Outside of the extraordinary events, the overtime you highlighted in the memo is being, you know, over budget. Do you see that in the short term anyway, given the SafeTrack plan and other things being a, you know, potential budget challenge?
So in the last few years, Metro has actually taken significant efforts to right-size overtime. What you're seeing now is a temporary aberration because of what's going on. But if when you look at the overall expense category, it's actually significantly lower than budget because of the timing it's obviously to hire and recruit folks and assign them in the right places. So, yeah, we view that as an aberration at this point and we something that will align appropriately going forward.
Mr. Evans?
Yeah, a couple of things that I need you to re-explain. So at the end of the third quarter, we are where in our expenditures and revenues? We're a little bit ahead, or where are we?
At the end of the third quarter, we are better than budget by $32 million.
Okay.
We are positive to budget by $32 okay. million. Dollars.
But we're predicting that by the end of the fourth quarter that we're going to be behind?
We're saying that we could be behind by the end of the fourth quarter. There are a lot of things going on
right.
that will impact ultimately where we end up. Our goal is to end the year with a balanced budget.
Clearly, yes. Okay, so we will be taking those mitigating steps you're talking about between now and the end of the quarter to make sure we end up with a balance.
If necessary, correct.
Okay. The second thing you mentioned, we're paying operating dollars to buy train cars. Is that right?
We're using operating dollars. This board authorized the use of operating dollars to buy spare parts.
Spare parts.
Right.
Not the cars themselves.
Not the
but
cars
the spare
themselves.
Parts for the
spare,
cars.
Correct.
Okay. And then the third point goes to Mort's comment. Although I and the board agree to use capital dollars to balance the operating budget, I would just, this is me talking now, as we prepare our next year's budget, we need to prepare a budget that puts everything in the right places, not using capital dollars for operating expenses or operating to buy things that should be capital. I would like to see a budget that has everything where it belongs because I need to get a handle on how much the shortfall is going to be. What I've been saying is because we've used $100 million of capital dollars to balance the upcoming budget, we are $100 million in the hole going into 18. And if you add to that your general 2 to 3% increase that happens, say another $20 million, and then whatever happens in labor, there'll be some amount, we could be looking at starting the preparation of the FY18 budget $120 million in the hole. And so I would like, as we do that, to make sure that whatever else could be added to that number that I'm not thinking of right now is done. So I have an understanding going into 18 as we prepare the budget how much in the hole we are. The reason that's important is twofold. Number one, as we attempt to get the federal government to contribute to know the magnitude of the problem. And number two, if we are unsuccessful, that the jurisdictions are going to be facing a huge bill increase. And I'm putting everyone on notice around the region now that they could be seeing a 40, 50, 60, who knows, million-dollar increase in their contribution to the system. So, because I don't think we can any longer move things around like we've been doing in the past. So I just throw that out, Michael, as the chairman, that we need to start thinking of this now because there are problems on the horizon.
Okay? I think your number is a ballpark number of 120, 125, 130 million as a starting point for FY18 is a good one because it reflects, as you point out, the difference between a more traditional budget where our preventive maintenance expenses are not in the capital budget, but
right.
Back where they should be in the operating budget.
Right.
And a cost of living increase, consumer price index, and cost of wages and compensation, that all
yeah.
those things. And the chief financial officer and I have exchanged some emails, and he's going to be working up some sort of an early preview number. We're going to have to agree with the general manager with some assumptions for him to use, but we're going to
and my
get
motivation
that as quickly
behind
as
this is if I'm the chairman of whatever council or board of supervisors or whatever, and I know today that I may be facing a $50 million increase, I would be motivated to get the federal government to contribute. That's what I would be doing if I were sitting in one of those spots. Rather than me coming up with that money, I would try to find somebody else who would come up with that money. So there's a motivation behind this. And we need to share all of this, everyone around the board, with the people who have sent us here, that this is a real possibility. Somebody's going to pay that money. And we would like someone not being our jurisdictions to have to do that. So thank you, Michael.
Yeah, you're welcome. Other questions? Yes, Suggins.
On the point that you made about the delta for the ongoing budget, in that framework that we are building it, we removed this year what was the contribution of fares. We are contributing, as we are saying here, looking for outside dollars. And I think it's going to be important that we sit down and kind of walk through what this budget structure is, such that if we have changed philosophically how we believe we can fund this services, I think we need to start out either with this budget being I call it a gap budget from where we were before, and how do we get more? Because we are taking elements out of the budget that are not here today because we removed them from the table, and thus when you move to the next budget, you're moving different dollars that look differently for the future. So I do agree that it means that we all have to look at different places, but I think we need to lay this out rather than just a conversation, but structurally, what is it going to look like? And I think the operating capital piece has not been a traditional one for us. That is, we only moved the capital in this particular instance to make up the difference of a delta in the operating budget that we chose to remove. And I think we need to make sure we find what is the structure that we're going to use.
Yeah. I mean, let's be clear. What we're talking about is a budget for FY18, which is a year beginning in July 1st, 2017. So
yeah.
We started this discussion talking about the rest of this year, FY16, which ends June 30th. Last month, we approved a budget for the next year, which begins July 1. So everybody don't get too concerned as yet. We're talking about a year that begins July 1, 2017. All right. Other questions? All right. Just before we turn to the capital budget, just to follow up on colloquy with Chairman Evans, I think you had indicated in our prior conversations that there was also a surplus from a prior year that was available as we try to figure out what we need to do to balance this FY16 budget. Do you want to just explain again what is the amount of that surplus and how it could be used?
At this point, based on the FY15 audit, there's about $13 million that's a surplus from an accumulated surplus from prior years. So it's not a significant amount of money, but it's there to the extent that it is needed to make sure that we do not have to go back to the jurisdictions with respect to the FY16 budget.
Yeah. Would the jurisdictions have to sign off or approve the use of that money for meeting a gap for FY16?
My understanding of the process is that this board will have to authorize the use of those funds.
Thank you. All right. If there are no other questions, we'll move on to the report on the FY16 capital budget as it stands through the end of March 31st, 2016.
Okay. Turning to the capital program, Metro has invested $667 million through the first 9 months, including about $250 million just in the quarter alone. This is a significant improvement over FY15, when only about 40% of the capital budget was invested through a similar period. So what I will do over the next few briefly is to provide some highlights within some categories, starting with vehicles.
I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. Mr. Costa has a question.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. And before we talk about the details, a question and a request. I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past. Spending on the capital program is not a smooth expenditure month by month. And so to some extent, I'm assuming we have monthly spend plans for the capital program. It would be useful to understand those and how we're performing month by month. And I think more importantly, what I don't really get from this graph, which I guess is a summary level of performance, is what our planned expenditure is and what our projected expenditure will be end of year. And I think that's really, really important information from the standpoint of performance of the program. And we talked about that in past meetings. So I'm hoping that we can get that kind of data soon.
Okay. We will certainly provide that, but we're also expecting that there will be a much broader conversation with the committee that's actually charged with reviewing the entire capital program cycle. But we will certainly provide that information to you. Going back, or starting with vehicles, Metro invested $304 million in this category as of the third quarter, again, significantly higher than similar time in FY15. And for most of that, Metro will get, so far, 114 of the 7,000 series rail cars, 100 of which are already in service, with 14 of those in commissioning process. We've also gotten 125 buses of the 189 that were replaced targeted for replacement during the fiscal year. In terms of systems and technology, Metro has invested $90 million through the third quarter. Again, slightly better than it was last year, and key accomplishments in this category include replacement of cables, orange boots and sleeves, as we've complied with various safety directives and initiatives. We've also addressed the power station repair with respect to the fire and upgraded a substation, as well as other activities in that particular category. On maintenance facilities, the expenditures for the year is about $57 million through March, and the work primarily has focused on rail yard improvements in terms of maintenance facilities, as well as two major bus garages, Cinderbed and Andrews, which were previously significantly delayed but are moving forward now much faster than we anticipated. In terms of passenger facilities, investment in this category is running slightly ahead of schedule, which is actually a good thing. And because of that, Metro has been able to rehab 15 of 19 elevators, replace 14 of 17 elevators so far, as well as rehab 15 of 18 escalators through March. And for track and structures, Metro spent about $48 million to tamp 27 of 40 miles of track, replace 7 of 12 miles of running rail, as well as cross tiles, as well as fasteners all across the system. With respect to rail infrastructure, Metro spends $55 million on projects, particularly the GRS track circuits replacement, as well as Orange Line rehabilitation. And finally, Metro has invested about $10 million in the maintenance category, focusing on projects including the comprehensive radio communication infrastructure replacement, as well as other shop parts, or rather shop equipment, including forklifts and things like that. With that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation. I'll be glad to respond to any questions.
Questions? Mr. Giancola.
Thank you for the report. On the vehicles, it looks like at least the planned expenditures for this fiscal year, which ends the end of June, we still have $154 million that's unspent. The question I have is, are we expecting the rail cars and bus procurements to be in so we can obligate that money or spend that money?
They are fully obligated, and yes, we are actually, with respect to the rail cars, over the last couple of months, the deliveries, as the GM pointed out last time, has improved 12 months, and we expect that will be the performance barring any other unforeseen circumstances. The boss piece has been working out quite well. There's been other areas where we have not met target only because the delivery schedules have not been consistent with the original budget. But yes, they are already encumbered, and we expect to spend them hopefully this year, if not by as
so,
part of
so the you're expecting cycle. All that money to be spent, the $304 million?
We expect it all to be spent, not necessarily spent within this current fiscal year.
Thank you. Can you help me understand what happens to the unspent balances in prior budget years? Like, are those dollar amounts embedded in these numbers, or is that a separate calculation?
So the way the process works is that because these funds, to the extent they are under contracts, are all obligated, and to the extent that they are not spent within a calendar year or a fiscal year, they're carried over along with those projects until completion. Those numbers, the unspent numbers, are in this in the reports that we're providing today.
Okay. What? Can you help me understand the magnitude of that unspent balance?
So if we go back to the numbers that the FTA released, I think that the numbers were about, in the aggregate, of about $700 million. That's the unreimbursed amount. As we pointed out, of those amounts, about $400 million had already been spent, but not recovered from FTA. So there's about $300 million that are unspent, but are obligated to contracts like the rail car contracts like the garage replacement. So obviously we can't pay a contract until they deliver on the time, based on the terms of the contract. But at this point, it's about $300 million that are unspent in terms of funds that are available to us.
Okay, but money from previous budget years, is not, if it's spent in this year, it's not reflected in these expenditure rates, or is it?
If funds are not spent in this calendar year, they are incorporated in the next capital program that this board approves. That's why we do come to the board every now and then with a reprogramming if necessary to make sure that those funds are included in the upcoming budget.
Okay, so let me be a little bit more explicit about the nature of my question. So your historic expenditure rate has been like 70 or 75%, correct?
Slightly less than that.
Yeah, less, so yeah, maybe high 60s. So there's that 30%. What happens to that 30%? Does it roll into the next budget year, or is that do we see that in the numbers that you just walked us through, or is that behind the curtain?
No, you see it. You know, they roll over into what the budget approves, into what the board approves for the next fiscal year, and you see those numbers as part of the reports that we just provided.
Okay. And so it comes into the kind of baseline
correct.
Budget for the budget year that you're in.
That's correct.
Okay, so there's not additional resources available that could be if you wanted to delete the project, if you wanted to rescope the project. That's not additive. It's just within the baseline budget of $1.2 billion.
That's correct.
Okay. That's not to say that you couldn't reprogram these dollars.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Mr. Evans?
Thank you, Michael. I want to talk about our bond rating quick, just so everybody knows where we are in this thing. The opportunity, one thing Metro is in good shape on is we do have capacity to borrow money, and we may have to do that to do some of these capital improvements that we're working on. Recently, we were downgraded by Moody's. My understanding, I don't have the thing in front of me, but and I want you to elaborate on this. My understanding that part of the reason we were downgraded was because, number one, we don't have a dedicated funding source, and number two, because we're on manual drawdown with our federal government. And there were other reasons as well. So I just wanted you to elaborate a little bit on that. Why did we get downgraded? Where are we with the Standard & Poor's? I believe we're still, you mentioned to me, we might be on a hold there. And where are we with Moody's? So just a little bit of information on the bond ratings. And again, the real importance of this is if we have to go into the capital markets, the bond ratings determine the interest rate. The lower your bond rating, the higher the interest rate. So go ahead, anybody. Dennis, go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. You are correct that Moody's recently downgraded Metro one notch from where we were 2 weeks ago.
And what is that?
We were at A minus.
A minus. Okay.
And they've now downgraded us to A2. But as you also indicated, S&P has returned Metro at this current rating, which is AA minus. Or rather, Moody's was A1, now we've gone to A2, but Standard & Poor's is still at AA minus. Again, you're also correct that part of the reason why the Moody's downgraded Metro was the absence of dedicated funding. But they also included in that the current activities around safety and the things that we've, the general managers identified as necessary actions that needs to be taken to address any perception regarding safety in the system itself. The second, I think in my view, the second biggest thing that they alluded to in that downgrade was the absence of ECO privileges, which has limited Metro's ability to draw funds quickly from FTA after expanding capital resources. And obviously they are concerned that the longer that exercise, the longer the current process continues, that it will continue to be impactful to Metro, both in terms of cost and in terms of time and resources. And so those two things, the absence of dedicated funding and the ECO privileges, are things that, in their view, impacts Metro's financial condition.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Anasaki, before we go forward, we had changeover a number of board members. Could you just explain a little more detail? What are the ECO privileges and how they work for most transit properties and how they now work for WMATA?
With respect to transit agencies and the grants process, the normal process is that once an agency expense federal grant funds that you can request through an automated process reimbursement for those expenses. That automated process, which is called ECHO, takes at best 2 to 3 days for those funds to come to you. For Metro at this point, the absence of that privilege means that we have to manually assemble all documentation with respect to a particular expenditure, and then walk through the FTA process to get those documents to them, to have them review those documents, and then give approval for us to draw down on those funds. The challenge has been that that process takes is cumbersome, it is expensive, and it's obviously it's been costly. Certainly on our side, I suspect also on FTA side, and which is why we've done several things so far, and also doing a lot more to make sure that we get back on ECHO, and we believe that we're at the point where it ought to be restored.
We'll return to this issue in Ms. Sullivan's presentation, but just for clarification for board members, this is ECHO, is that the acronym, ECHO, ECHO, and does that stand for something, or is that an abbreviation for
Electronic Clearinghouse Operations.
Electronic Clearinghouse Operations. Sounds good. Okay. Mr. Bulger.
I'm glad you asked that, because at this point I had no idea either.
Well, that's...
there you go.
Now we know. As well.
Based on what the chairman was talking about, Dennis, on the and this ECHO thing, how close are we to satisfying the FTA's requirements to get us to automatic or electronic? Are we,
Mr. Bulger, can I ask
are we there?
Can we defer that to Ms. Sullivan's presentation? Because that is it's really part of her presentation, and I think it'll have better context in her presentation at that point. Mr. Downey?
Yeah, in the context of bond ratings, which I had a long experience with, I think it's useful to know that in the investment grade range, I think with Moody's, there are 10 notches. And I think we've now slipped from 4 to 5.
Right.
This is not that we're on the edge of becoming a junk bond. But to the extent we can, by getting ECHO privilege back in place and other things, put ourselves back up, it is a money issue. And it's also been my experience. Moody's tends to rate more on the headlines. Standard & Poor's tends to look more at the fundamentals.
Thank you. Other questions? Let me just, on the capital budget, before we move on to the next presentation, if we can go back to the slide that's at the top, FY 2016 capital progress, just to put this in context and follow up on Mr. Dormage's questions. One more? That's the one. All right. So for this year, for this year, FY 16, our approved capital budget is approximately $1.2 billion.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Okay. And I think your chart is showing that we've spent through the end of the third quarter approximately $670 million.
That's correct.
Is that correct? Okay. So where do you project we will be at the end of the year over the next 3 months? What, both in terms of what amount of capital spending we will hit and what will be the percentage completion compared to past years?
We expect we'll do better than we've done over the last 3, 4, 5 years. If that means, whether that means it'll be $1 billion or $900 million will be... It's hard to say at this point. We certainly expect it's going to be close to $1 billion by the end of the year,
And now the follow-up question, just to break that down, in response to Mr. Giancola's question, you indicated you expected to hit the $304 million for vehicles, rail cars, and buses. On the other components, which of those do you expect to hit close to 100%?
Well,
systems, maintenance, which are the ones that we should expect to cross the finish line, and which do we expect we're going to be down closer to 60 or 70%?
Yeah, I think we're better positioned with vehicles than with construction. I mean, where you get most of the challenges on the construction side. Part of the reason why we've had some challenges on facilities and maintenance is, again, related to permits, but we're moving slightly ahead, better in those categories. But it would be difficult to tell you at this point, you know, precisely which ones are going to hit 100% or not. Based on the monthly meetings that and the other meetings that the GM is coordinating with the project teams, we are suddenly seeing greater focus, and both in terms of structure and execution, and we expect that that will be reflected in the numbers by the end of the fiscal year.
I mean, an area of usual concern among riders and board members is elevators and escalators, where we've budgeted $129 million.
Right.
Do we expect to get sort of across the finish line in that area?
Yes. I mean, if you look at the numbers there, you see that we're actually ahead of target in those categories. And again, those we are prepared to dedicate resources to those areas where we're seeing faster progress. And that's frankly the challenge that the GM has given to the entire team.
Thank you.
Mr. Smedberg.
In that same line, I mean, there's in the more detailed presentation, systems and technology. Not quite 50%, three quarters of the year through. Despite some significant improvements there, it's still not 50% to three quarters of the way through.
Right. Yeah. This is actually the track systems and technology, not the usual computers and things for administrative support. Yes, it has been challenged for some of the same reasons that we're seeing, obviously, with respect to track time and other things. But again, there's great focus on areas that are behind to address whatever issues are being addressed. And I think this is something that the chief engineer can provide additional context for as part of the presentation to the Committee on Capital Programs and Real Estate, hopefully sometime soon.
Thank you. Follow up there. Okay. All right.
We've gone through the FY16 operating budget. We've gone through the capital budget, so I think we're ready to turn back to Mr. Bulger's area of getting to ECHO and the FTA audit. Ms. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning to you and members of the committee. Our purpose for this item today is to provide you with information on WMATA's progress in addressing the deliverable expectations of FTA's Testing and Validation Plan, also known as the Financial Manager and Oversight, or FMO, Testing and Validation Plan. As the committee may recall from prior discussions, FTA's Testing and Validation Plan, in essence, puts WMATA into the testing and validation or closeout stage of the findings from the June 10, 2014 FMO review. Within its plan, FTA has expressed that its primary objective would be to validate that WMATA has implemented corrective actions necessary to address the material weaknesses and the significant deficiencies identified during the June 10th review, or the review with the report dated June 10th, 2014. With a total of 20 action items and related WMATA deliverables grouped into three categories, staff continues to meet FTA's deliverable timelines with a first set of actions responded to back in October 2015. As of March 31st, 2016, WMATA has responded to 16 of the 20 action items, and based on the testing and validation completed by FCA so far, five of those items have been closed. The following slide that you see above you provides a visual of where we stand relative to the three categories that FCA has put the actions into and the expected actions that are required for each category. In Category A, where we would be completed actions required to remove ECHO restrictions from all grants awarded July 1st, 2015, or after July 1st, 2015, or what we call our new grants, there are 10 action items required in that category. Of those 10 action items, as of March 31st, WMATA has completed 8 of those action items based on FCA's plan and schedule. In Category B, where we have 3 actions required, and these three actions are aligned to removal of ECHO restrictions for grants awarded prior to July 1, 2015, which would be, again, our older grants. WMATA has completed two of those actions, also as of March 31st, based on FDA's plan and schedule. The third category and final category includes seven action items that have no impact on ECHO, however, would be required to close out FMO completely. These seven action items, of these seven action items, WMATA has completed six, also based on FDA's testing and validation plan and schedule. As previously noted, 16 of the 20 action items have been completed by WMATA. Five of them have been closed, again, as mentioned. 11 of the 16 submitted are currently under active review by FDA, leaving us with four open items that are shown above with the details as well. This actually leads us to the next slide, which outlines the status of the restoration of WMATA's ECHO privileges. And if you have may have observed in the previous slide, three of the four open action items are actually aligned to ECHO restrictions. In terms of where we stand, the next slide provides the status of the ECHO restrictions. Going back to the 2014 review of FDA, FDA identified nine findings and five advisory comments. The report also gave us 45 recommendations. In response to those 45 recommendations, WMATA provided 65 corrective actions that have been fulfilled as of June 30, 2015. In terms of draw accuracy, with the 2 years since we've been under these ECHO restriction or restriction of ECHO privileges, WMATA has implemented significant process and control improvements, which have resulted in a high level of draw accuracy. This is evidenced, of course, by the more than 99% rate of acceptance of our reimbursements that have gone through this manual restriction process, or what we call an error rate of 0.68%. 13 of the testing and validation plan action items align to the restoration of ECHO privileges, as mentioned before. And based on this testing, we have closed out five, I believe I mentioned that, and of course we have 16 that were submitted total. As of March 31st, two of the four open items are awaiting actual due dates and requirements from FDA. Also, two have a future FDA date. These are items that have to be completed prior to the lifting of the ECHO restriction as outlined above. In general, we are awaiting FDA to complete all the testing and validation plan-related activities. And from a high-level summary and timeline, to just give you a summary of where we are and things that we've accomplished so far, back in October 2015, we presented FDA with our first deliverable items. FDA started their evaluation process somewhere around November after those submissions. We received formal response from FDA for the October deliverables in December 2015. FDA began the evaluation of the November deliverables back in December. This also included an on-site visit from the FDA in January of 2016. As of the end of March, FDA is actively reviewing action items that we submitted for the January deliverables as well as the March deliverables. Formal responses for December submissions were also received in March. WMATA continues to work with FDA and the FDA Financial Management Oversight Contractor to timely meet all deliverable expectations of FDA's testing and validation plan, and also to provide support needed to accomplish on-site and off-site testing objectives. Specifically, WMATA is in active discussions with FDA to define actual due dates for the and also set expectations for the two items we mentioned earlier that currently have no defined due date. WMATA is also working to respond to the two action items that are due in December 2016, according to FDA's testing and validation plan. In terms of next steps, our office, the Office of Internal Control and Compliance, continues to conduct compliance monitoring activities, including planned reviews and assessments of financial management controls. During the period ended March 31st, compliance completed seven internal reviews. The details of these reviews, as well as the objectives, the scopes, the results, and corrective actions taken by management were included in the quarterly financial management oversight report that was sent to the board on May the 6th, 2016, so recently provided to the board. The report also outlines the reviews that are in progress as well as actions taken so far as of March 31st. In response to the recommendations from the GAO to improve financial management after the FMO report, We have initiated a comprehensive assessment of financial management related risks. We're in the process of formally identifying and documenting financial management controls. This effort will be completed by June 30th and will become a part of our normal process in improving our financial management controls. A risk-based review work plan will be developed using the results of this comprehensive assessment that would be started for FY17 as the review process continues. Mr. Chairman, this concludes the quarterly FMO update. At this time, I would gladly accept your questions.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. Yes, in a moment, sir. I should point out that two members left the meeting, Mr. Costa and Ms. Porter, not because they have any disagreement with the nature of the presentation or that they don't think highly of the responsibilities as members of the Finance Committee, but they do have another meeting of WMATA board to go to at this time. I just wanted to make that clear to everybody. You shouldn't feel offended at all.
Not at all.
Mr. Boulder.
Okay, so given that we're at 99% accuracy, and you said we're only off by less than a little over half a percent, 0.68 or something, you said, and given the dates that I'm looking at that you gave us for the end of the year, 12/31/2016, do you think by the end of June we could be in a position to request that we get back on electronic reimbursement?
Mr. Borgia, we have made that request on several occasions to the FTA. We believe that the remaining items are such that we can meet that particular deadline. The accuracy rates that have been identified here, and when you think or look at other transit agencies, we believe that we are at the point where echo restoration should be provided back to WMATA.
All right, based on what the chairman was talking about earlier today about another matter, can you just keep us apprised as to whether we can make this request happen by mid-year versus waiting till the end of the year? Because I'm worried that the end of the year is going to mean a big drag out because of new administration, new people, you know, new fingers and bodies on this issue.
So we made that point as well because we're pushing as hard as we can.
Mr. Isaac, could you just, for the benefit of the existing board members and the other board members public, just indicate in the 2 years we've been under these ECHO restrictions, how much has WMATA actually requested? And how much has been reimbursed? So what's the delta that we've been sort of missing for over the last 2 years as a result of the ECHO restrictions?
In the 2 years, we've requested close to $1 billion and have received approval for almost $900 million. Obviously, so we still have, as of today, almost $183 million at FTA being reviewed between labor and labor by their consultants, and we continue to work with FTA. The challenge is that, again, as I indicated earlier, the process is cumbersome. The resource commitments are significant, certainly on our side, and that, as Mr. Borgia pointed out, with an upcoming transition, it will push the decision even further than it ought to be.
I mean, that $100 million-plus, I assume, is the reason we've gone after these GANs notes, grant anticipation notes, and been spending down on the line of credits. And what's been the cost to the authority and the jurisdictions and the taxpayers of living under these ECHO restrictions for the last 2 years?
For WMATA, its customers and the jurisdiction, the cost has been about $9 million and counting.
$9
million? Correct. $9 million and counting.
I'm also just, help me understand. I was curious about the cost, which I appreciate. I'm also wondering whether or not that has slowed down
Has it created a slowdown in some of the safety that, based on cash flow, that we've been able to implement on some projects at all?
No, actually, that was the reason why the board did not want to complicate the safety efforts by suspending projects. And so the decision was made to identify alternative funding sources, but obviously that has been at some cost to the authority and to the jurisdictions.
Mr. Dean Cole?
Yeah, thank you again. Thank you for the report. Just to follow on to these questions, I noticed that, you know, we have several kinds of inspections that have been done on us in the financial area. The GAO report is mentioned there in that next steps. Certainly the audits that we've had completed over the last couple of years, are they impacting at all on this return to electronic reimbursement? In other words, is FTA looking at these other types of reports as well and maybe holding up that return to the electronic?
I'm not sure, or we're not sure what else FTA is looking at with respect to their decision-making process other than what they've advised us.
Have we asked them?
We have asked them, but they've indicated, obviously, 20 items, as Liz pointed out, that they will test. I think the challenge has been, in light of everything else that's going on, the speed at which those activities are going on and what collateral impact that has on all of us.
Okay, to follow on to that, you did identify 11 FTA testing in progress. Are we both our side and their side working together to expedite that? I mean, is it on schedule? Is no hang-ups there?
We have provided them those responses, so it is entirely on their side of the table in terms of their review.
And in your view, are they working in all due diligence to get that done? I noticed a smile there.
Well, maybe I can mention here, they have been in constant communication with us, and those 11 items that are open are at various stages of completion. So as I mentioned, with some of the reviews, as they complete them, they provide us with a formal letter outlining things that they want in addition or follow-up questions, and we've been responding timely to those items. So all of those 11 items are at various stages of completion, and we believe that they've been giving us formal responses, and we've been responding all the time to them.
Thank you.
And just, you know, I meet with the regional administrator, and we meet with their contractors where we go through these issues. Again, is there anything that's slowing this up that we can do on our end? Okay. And we obviously communicate our desire to get off that go as quick as possible.
Mr. Schneider.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On your slide that had the four outstanding items and the categories, this one here, so the to be determined, so point of information, what does that mean exactly? Could they come back to you tomorrow morning and say you're done? Is that what that means, or does that mean they have no idea and it potentially goes beyond December 31st, 2016?
So what we understand when this plan was originally defined back in September was because FTA wanted some level of flexibility to identify exactly what needed to be done given all the other action items that were on that list. As early as January, FDA was working through some reviews around the procurement area, and some of the indications we got from them was before they could give us a date for this particular item, they were waiting on some of those results as well. So it was designed to remain flexible based on what FDA communicated to us.
So they could come back to you again, say, tomorrow morning and say June 30th?
So, I mean, you could say that.
I mean, theoretically, yes. I mean, or it could be beyond the end.
But we have been in active discussions with them trying to come up with a defined date and defined requirements as early as a few days ago.
Yeah. Well, that and that's helpful because to be determined doesn't mean that they see this as particularly problematic necessarily, but you're moving forward together.
Mr. Downing?
Yeah. Just again, in terms of the cash flow issues, you said we have submitted $1 billion. And have gotten reimbursed $900 million, and that's a big step forward from where we were. But my recollection is, the $100 million difference is not the sum total of all our unreimbursed funds. That number, as I recall from earlier this morning, is $400 million. We brought that down, but we still have a large once ECHO is in place, that can all be drawn down, or a good portion of it.
A good portion of it will be, but more fundamentally going forward,
yeah.
I mean, all of the new expenses that are not tied to the previous set of issues can be reimbursed, you know, quickly.
But the need for our continuing using the lines of credit and the temporary borrowing was because $400 million has been spent by us and not reimbursed.
That's correct.
Not that it won't be reimbursed. It hasn't been reimbursed.
On this chart here, open items, the two that show a date of December 31st of this year, is there any reason from a modest standpoint why those reconciliations and paybacks can't be completed by June 30th? Is there any reason why we need 6 months to aim for this deadline?
No. In fact, there's been a reconciliation that was done December last year, and I mean, this is really a policy issue. I mean, obviously, to the extent there are errors or mistakes in draws, we are required to refund, and grantees are required to refund that. And we've made that commitment to FTA now. And we think actually those two items ought to be closed. And we continue to talk with the regional office to see if they will agree to that view.
You or the general manager sent a written request to FTA to be relieved of the ECHO restrictions at this time? Is there a document?
There has been several communications on both sides on this issue.
Could you distribute that to the board member, the most recent one asking? I think the board members might want to consider asking our congressional delegation to get involved in this and try
some
and
of them,
get
oh,
us off
some
of this.
Some of them already are. Yeah.
Maybe we can move this up some, because it seems from this chart and the discussion that we're facing a continuation of these ECHO restrictions through sometime early in next year, 2017, which looking at the political calendar is a year when there will definitely be a new administration in Washington, new people, and that doesn't augur well for an early release from the ECHO restrictions of the new administration. I think at least this board member and perhaps others, I think we'd like to consider whether we should try to do something with our congressional delegation to get this resolved early in this year rather than let it wait until sometime in 2017.
We will.
If you can provide that, Mr. Downey.
This whole process of reconciling the federal grants, we also have in place a parallel process, as I understand, to reconcile all the jurisdictional contributions. Because to the extent all of these projects were federal and local, until they're straightened out, we still have work to do with the jurisdictions.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I heard something, so I wanted to make sure I heard it right. And as you know, we have going forward and everything we apply, get our money back. But as Mort was talking about, there's money from a long time ago that we have not gotten back because we didn't have the proper forms to file to get it back. It was that $400 million figure. Yeah, so my question is, I thought I heard that it's not 400 anymore, it's less than 400.
It's still 400, but it's a different 400.
Okay, well, now I'm confused. So what is the different 400 from the same? I'm not interested in everything we're doing right. You know, we spend the money, we send the forms in, they look at them, they give our money back. I got that part. And I'm talking about before in the past, there was money out there that we couldn't get back.
Right.
So where are we on that, and why is it a different 400? How could there be two 400s? There's no coincidence in the world. How could there be two 400s?
Okay, so
is it a coincidence?
No, it's a dynamic process, obviously, as we recover. For each day we spend capital dollars.
I got that part.
Fortunately, every money that you spend goes into the same bucket. Yeah. That's part of what our conversation
right,
with
right,
FTA
right.
ought to do. But in terms of what we, the outstanding reimbursements, which, if you recall, started almost $500 million, most of which was labor cost,
yeah.
because we didn't have timesheets.
Right, that's it. That's
right.
The money.
FTA has, to their credit, worked with us to walk through the process. They audited the entire process, and as a result, we've recovered almost $300 million of that $500 million.
Okay.
The reason why Morty is saying it's 400 now is because, obviously, in the intervening period, there's been additional expenses.
Gotcha.
And that's where we
are. So we have about 200 still of our, I refer to it as the timesheet money.
Not just timesheets, but also consulting costs.
Other things, yeah. Right. So, but that's still out there that we could potentially get.
That's correct.
If we could somehow prove that we should get it.
That's correct. All and right. We are working very hard to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Schneidberg, did you have another question or you're good? Very good. I think we've reached the conclusion of our session today. Just to give warning to board members for next session of the Finance Committee in early June, there's probably three issues that we may want to address based on what we talked about today. The FY16 operating budget and any need to make some changes so that it ends up being a balanced budget for the year. The ECHO restrictions and any action that the committee and board wants to take to move an end to that earlier than what seems to be sometime in 2017 under the current schedule. And third, we may take an early look at some issues surrounding the FY2018 budget if we get our numbers in line for a ballpark estimate of that early on. So that's what you have to look forward to. Now we will move into a meeting of the Safety Committee, and I will pass the gavel to my colleague, Mr. Downey.